Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to have here in the studio, once again, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And once a month, on a Tuesday, she's here. And we talk about things that grow in the home. Landscape, lawn, and garden care, yeah, whatever. We can do houseplant questions, any and all of that. The idea is if maybe you have something and you got a problem and you're not quite sure how to solve it, you particularly don't want to see that problem somehow carried over into the next growing season, we can talk about that. Maybe you're still thinking about planting something, and certainly there are still things that we can plant. Or you got any other sorts of general kinds of questions about things that grow around the home landscape. That's fine. Call in and tell us about it, and she will do her best to see if she can help you out. 333-9455. That's the number here in Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line, and that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. At any point here, if you've got questions, you can give us a call. Well, thanks very much
for being
here once again.
Beautiful
man,
day.
This has been a weird time. First of all, we had 2 months where we got really too much. It was just too wet. And then suddenly we go into August and we barely got over half an inch, I think, of precip. So in my yard, and I'm sure other people have this same problem, I've got plants that I think actually were stressed by too much moisture and we got root rot or something like that. And then suddenly we get plants and now they look like they're stressed because August was so dry. And I'm thinking, okay, particularly for my for perennials, is there anything in particular I can be doing for them now to try to get them in as good a shape as they can be now to go into their resting time so that they're going to come back and be good next year?
Well, I think probably a couple of things to keep in mind is if they haven't, because we've gotten a little bit of rain, you know, since then. I shouldn't say a little bit. Some of us got about almost 5 inches of rain just recently. Yeah. So if they haven't recovered, and, you know, now that the temperatures are very mild, if they haven't recovered, you know, after that, you know, kind of droughty period we had in August and they haven't really recovered, then I'd really wonder about their long-term health. So those may be ones where you want to do a little investigation. I was talking to someone before about sedums, which normally we think of are pretty tough plants. You know, they take a lot. But we saw an awful lot of root rot problems in those. And so now they're actually suffering, even though they could take drought very well normally. But because of the root rot problems they're having, they don't look very good right now. So some of those I really wonder, you may want to think about, you know, taking advantage of some sales that people are having on their perennials and may really want to think about some replacements if things haven't recovered and aren't looking halfway decent. The other thing is, as long as the leaves are green, don't cut them off. You know, let them die down natural. That's true of peonies and all those things, because as long as there's leaves on there, then there's a chance they can go ahead and make their own food and do better next year.
Okay. So, I certainly have some stuff that is starting to look better after not looking good. This spring I planted some catmint that I thought was a really pretty plant, and they were very healthy and vigorous. And man, they just got to the point where they sort of turned black and shriveled up. They were looking terrible. Yeah. And then a couple of weeks ago, they started to put on new growth. And now they're looking better, although now they're these little stubby little things where they were these, you know, tall, really beautiful things.
Right.
So what I did was the stuff that was obviously dead, I have cut back. And hopefully that they'll be okay, but I'm just thinking, well, is there anything else that I could be doing or should be doing for them to try to encourage them to, you know, get as strong as they can? And we've got probably, I don't know, maybe another month before really the growing season's going to be over.
Oh, sure. So plenty of things will have a chance to recover. Now, actually, that's a good point, because sometimes things will actually die back. What we saw with a lot of catmint and then even thyme and some of those is they actually got some leaf disease problems that caused the top part to die back, but the roots and stuff were just fine. And so now they're going to recover. So cut that stuff and recover. So I guess that's where it takes a little bit of investigation to see if maybe the crowns are, you know, like with sedum, the problem was the crowns were actually rotten. And those don't come back really from that. So you have to, again, sort of a little investigation, prune off stuff that's obviously dead and then kind of see what happens. Yeah. But yeah, easily another month yet. See what's going on.
Sandy Mason's here with taking your gardening questions, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. We'll start out with someone on our toll-free line, line 4, right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
We have a lawn that is largely seeded, or largely sloped, I should say, rather steep, and a good deal of shade. And thus, I suppose, I'm classically afflicted with, I think it's called Creeping Charlie, mm-hmm. which we're not even supposed to mention on this program. but I'm rather desperate. I've given it two doses of Trimec, and it looks mildly surprised.
If not angry, huh?
But no, it's not in decline. It then shrugs and goes on with living. Yeah. And the question I have is, do I work on that anymore? I'm worried about it being the only green thing with roots to hold a sloping soil. If I kill it off, what's left? What do I do?
I mean, you have an it's an excellent question because, you know, it's kind of strike two when it comes to the grasses part of the lawn. You know, if you have really shady conditions, grasses don't do well in shady conditions. And then if you have a really high slope or extreme slope, then it gets very hard if the grass isn't growing very well to begin with. And then you have the steep slope, then it makes it even harder for it to grow. So I think this might be a perfect opportunity to sort of rethink this. You know, is this really a place where lawn's appropriate? Maybe this isn't a place for lawn to be anyway, because it doesn't sound like it's particularly good growing conditions, because none of the grasses do well in 100% shade. None of them do. None of the lawn grasses do. You need at least 4 hours for them to really do halfway decent with a shady lawn.
Oh, yes, and I know that soil is washing and trees are showing bony roots at the surface.
And unless you just really hate the way the Creeping Charlie looks, you might just decide that that's just a perfectly good ground cover and I'm not going to worry about it. Mm. I mean, there isn't anything to say that you can't grow that as a ground cover. So you could think about that. You might think about, you know, maybe you want other ground covers in there, or maybe you want something that's, you know, I don't know if this is an area where it requires some kind of traffic as you walk across it for some reason, but, you know, you may even want to think about something that has a little deeper root system, like hostas or something like that, that has a more deeper root system, maybe to hang onto the soil better than maybe some of the other, certainly some of the grass might.
Okay,
so you may want to think about that, or if there's other ways you can certainly change the area, as in, you know, retaining walls or whatever, sort of change the slope.
Okay.
But I have a feeling you've hit on the one thing, that grass is not a particularly good plant for this area, for that particular area that you're talking about.
I hadn't even considered Charlie as a permanent ground
cover. We won't tell anybody.
I
promise not to tell anybody, and I'd say 9 times out of 10, if people are seeing it from a distance, they'll just see it as a green thing, and they won't even know what it is anyway.
Well, it is an advantage. It does have roots.
And if it's growing and it's doing well, and it certainly does much better in shade than lawn grass does. Mm. And if we all keep the secret, then we're fine.
Okay. Tell that to David.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good luck. I know. It's tough, especially when you start getting into a slope like that. It's tough to get a lot of things growing.
Well, and that's just a particularly tough plant to deal with. It likes adverse conditions.
Sure.
I mean, that's the problem. And as we have talked about before, if you have it, for example, if you have it in your lawn, that what that is a sign is that for some reason the grass is just not very healthy. And so either you can try to improve conditions for the grass, or if it's just a place where grass doesn't want to grow because you got shade or whatever else, then you got to do something else. And
right.
I suppose if you can live with the Creeping Charlie, it does have a very nice purple flower in the spring. And as you've said, as we said so many times, well, it's green.
It's green. And it's green most of the time.
You know, you can mow it.
You
know, maybe you just live with it.
Maybe we change the name. We'll call it, because sometimes it's actually called ground ivy. Maybe that sounds better. We'll just call it ground ivy and we'll forget
come up with
that
a nice name
for it. It's
marketing.
It's all in the marketing
exactly.
thing, David.
let's start with somebody in Champaign. Line number one right here. Hello.
Yeah, as it moves up the walls, then we call it
call it kudzu.
I had a problem. What happened? I'm still contending, but actually the sun hit it, and I just quit cutting, and actually the grass is actually starting to really rebound to a certain degree. So I don't know. Maybe I can go in and do one each individual, but that's not my question for today. I need some suggestions. What's happened, I want to do something, at least my front yard. It's not there, and it's sunny and all that. You know how around houses, the house is about 30 years old, and what they used to do, or I don't know when they put it in, but where the water runs along it builds sort of a little drain like along there. So I have to put some fill in there. But they loved plastic, and then they put rocks over it, you know?
Oh.
And you just like right around the drip edge of the
roof. Along the house, you know.
Okay.
you know, the, what's his name, always recommends.
Oh, is it up close, just up close to the foundation.
Yeah, where you want to raise it 6 inches.
Right.
You know, so I want to do that. But I got plastic, and the problem is, you know, the rocks, and it's aggravating, and you know, the water takes that down, and then the lawnmower hits the plastic.
Yeah.
And it stops the lawnmower, you know. But anyway, any suggestion, you know, I'm going to go and, you know, backfill up there and everything. I'm going to take the rocks out, I'm going to take the plastic out. But is there any recommendation of some kind of material, or what would be the best thing to hold that? You know what I mean? You get what I mean? In other words,
I think what he would like to have is some foundation plantings that are going to control any possible erosion,
right,
in the area right around the house. Because the idea is that you want it to have a little slope, but if you get water coming down from your gutters or from the drip edge, it's going to run down. So you don't want it to carry the dirt away. So I guess the idea, something that'll grow right around the house. And it'll hold on to the soil there, so you don't have whatever runoff you have doesn't get rid of whatever soil you're going to put up.
Yeah, I don't even mind grass. I mean, but is there some kind of material that you can put under that will keep it, or you just put
under, as in under rock or under mulch? Or I guess I'm not sure what you mean by under.
Under the dirt or under the mulch or something or other, but or build it up. Any way to hold it there, I guess, is what I'm looking at. You know,
to hold the soil or the mulch or.
Yeah, right.
Whatever there. I mean, I guess I wonder a couple things. It sounds like you're getting an awful lot of erosion. Is that what's going on here? Are you getting a lot of water in one spot? I mean, you may want to rethink your guttering system.
It's just a matter of time. Nobody's ever done anything. I bought the house about 3 years ago.
Okay.
And what's happened is that what happens, I think what's even exacerbated the problem is that because the plastic was there, you know, that holds water.
Right.
And then they put the thing, and then actually eventually, you know, that sort of deteriorates, and it's become, you know, it's just way down on that area. But you know, I want to rebuild it, but I just don't want it to end up that I'm going to be putting it back.
Right. Right. It almost sounds like maybe you really need to think about maybe some sort of edging, like a brick edging or paver edging or something like that, that maybe might help to hold that in. Because it sounds like maybe you're just trying to hold the mulch or whatever into the bed area. Maybe I'm not gathering this quite right. But you may want to think about some sort of edging, and that certainly helps to bring the up. And, you know, we're only talking about a few inches, but sometimes that's all you need is to bring it up. I wouldn't put anything underneath the mulch itself, if that's what you're asking. I wouldn't put plastic or even I hesitate a little bit with the weed barrier kinds of things. Weed barrier, I think, is fine if you are going to be doing rock, but I wouldn't put it underneath, you know, wood chip mulch or anything like that. You know, if you do want to go that route. The nice thing about weed barrier stuff, it's a much better product now in that it does allow some water and air penetration. So it's just a better product along those lines. But it almost sounds like you really need to think about building up a little bit more with pavers or something that really holds those areas in better.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And maybe I'm not quite getting it.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. In other words, actually build it up more as a bed.
As a bed, absolutely.
And then that way the barrier would keep it up there to keep it from floating away, and then I could actually decide what to put in there.
Right, and then certainly some plantings, and you may want to think about shrubs or something along those lines that might have a little bit more extensive root system. But if you're getting a lot of washing, then even those guys aren't going to be very happy.
Yeah, well, the good news they had put three trees in the front yard. My yard's not too, and I had to unfortunately take out one, but it was a linden tree. But now I'm getting nice sun in there. Before that was the other.
Oh,
it was always mud. You know?
Right, yeah. right.
Well, thanks for your advice.
Okay, well, good luck.
Thank you.
You can pick up the rocks. They'll be out front.
Okay. Be interested in some rocks. Our guest this morning is part of Focus 580, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here once a month on a Tuesday, and we talk about lawn and garden care, taking care of plants that grow around the home landscape. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Line 2 is our next caller. Hello.
Hi. I wanted to ask two questions. I have the surprise lilies that come up in August, and last spring I had gobs and gobs of leaves all over the place and plants covering a big area, and I only got about 4 stalks of flowers that came up. And I was wondering, what do they only bloom once on a particular set of leaves, or did I needed to give them something they didn't get?
Well, have they been there for a while?
Yes.
In that area, yeah. They probably just really need to be divided. And when you dig them up, you find there's like a gazillion, literally a gazillion of bulbs under there. So once they get so thick in there, then they really have a hard time flowering. And the nice thing is, you know, you can move those guys all over the place. And so you can certainly do that now, you know, when you still kind of know where they are, and then just move them around and you can put them. I mean, I like putting them, you know, I think they're kind of funny because they don't have leaves with them, you know, when they flower. So they do kind of look kind of a little naked. But it's amazing. I've put them in with hostas before, and it looks really pretty. I've put them in just around other perennials. I put them, like, next to my peonies, so it almost looks like the peonies are kind of flowering again. You know, so it's, if you kind of really think about where you're going to put them, and you put them next to something that's a little bit tall or has a little height to it, even that cat mint that David was talking about earlier, or they're really beautiful, and, you know, you have so many of them, it'll be a lot of fun moving them around.
Could I put them in a batch of wild ginger?
Oh, sure.
Can they compete with that?
They seem to do, yeah, and they seem to do fairly well even in the shade. The only thing, of course, they are going to have the big leaves, so you have to kind of keep that in mind.
Right,
you don't want the big leaves.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I don't know how well that would overwhelm the wild ginger.
I could just see the stalks coming up through there, but I forgot about those leaves.
Yeah, the leaves are so big, you don't want it to overwhelm whatever plant you have. So it kind of, you need to make sure, if you put them sort of in the back or something where they have plenty of room on their own, then I think you'd be fine.
Right. And then the second one was, I have columnar arborvitae,
mm-hmm.
and I did not realize and did not pay attention to what they were doing. They're supposed to be only 4 feet wide, but they send up two main tips,
mm-hmm.
and you end up with things expanding all over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
And now if I cut one of those off, I'm just going to have bare. A whole bare side.
Yeah.
I can't figure how it's going to fill itself in.
And they really don't. They kind of do. And so I guess you kind of have to decide if the neighbors are looking at that and not you. You have to decide on whether. But you're right. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's one of those things that if people do buy arborvitaes, and you really have to be very selective when you purchase them and look for those ones that have one central leader. And sometimes that's hard to find, depending on what variety it is. But you have to be very selective because you've come across exactly the problem that a lot of those guys have is that they have these two leaders, and then as they get bigger, those keep opening up more and more, and then if we get a little ice or snow, then it opens up even more or even breaks off. So there really isn't much. I guess I'm not really giving you a lot of high hope here, but there really isn't a whole lot of to correct that if they're particularly big. Now, if they're young, you can sometimes get away with that.
Yeah.
But if they're big already, then that's really hard.
Can I start trimming the tips and the ends of the little branches that are coming out so they don't keep going sideways?
You certainly can do some of that as long as you don't get into the brown stuff.
Right.
They just don't leaf out from the brown stuff, but absolutely you can do some trimming, and you may find that one of those you can sort of trim down enough so it maybe it's a little bit smaller than the other one or something, so maybe it's not quite taking over. And then through time, sometimes you can get that other one to sort of start to fill in at least a little bit more.
Okay.
So it's kind of a long process, but every year if you do a little bit more trimming, you may find that one of them, you can get one of them to take over more.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, right, good thanks. Luck. It's a tough problem.
So on the lilies, the surprise, or sometimes they're called the naked ladies because they're naked. Because the foliage comes up first and then dies back, and then 2 months later, you get your flower. So if you're going to divide those, when now?
Yeah, you certainly can now. And actually, I would do it now while you still know where they are because they're kind of just finished flowering. So hopefully you still know where they are. But you certainly could do that now. Not a problem. Those things are so tough. You could actually do it in the spring, you know, earlier in the year when they're actually just showing foliage. They're pretty darn tough.
Okay.
I've moved them at just about any time and they've done well.
It was fun. Earlier this summer, I went out and there was one growing up right out of the middle of my compost pile. I thought, lady,
tough,
what are you doing there?
Lady, yeah.
And I moved her at that point. And that, I think, actually was the first time I'd ever seen. It looks like an onion.
Yeah. They're amaryllis is actually what it is.
Oh,
They're in that same family and stuff as amaryllis, so it kind of looks like a big amaryllis bulb. But they produce lots and lots and lots of babies, and that's why you get this huge mass of green leaves and not necessarily a lot of flowers. So.
Okay, because I do have some of those, and they're really nice plants. So,
yeah.
Okay,
yeah. I like them. They're easy to grow.
And I think it's really, when they come up, it's still kind of unexpected.
It's a surprise, isn't it?
They just pop up, and it seems like they pop up overnight
that
they grow that fast.
Way,
they're not there. And then they're there. All right. Let's talk next with somebody in Champaign, line 3. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, first of all, I might make a comment to the gentleman that called in with his erosion problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I have a sun porch that sticks out, and there are no gutters around the sun porch roof, so I had that problem. And I bought many varieties of hostas, most of them very big, broad leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And I planted them as close together as possible, and it's almost like it's a canopy effect where, you know, you sit there next to in the sun porch and you can just hear it like there's rain hitting the roof. It's so pleasant. And the big, broad leaves have prevented any more erosion.
Oh, good idea.
Yeah, I mean, there's just sort of a gentle soaking in. It doesn't hit really hard. And it doesn't seem to, you know, have bothered the hostas at all, so...
Oh, good idea.
Something he can think about. And if the different varieties make a very pleasant garden look.
Sure. So. I mean, and you can't beat hostas, I think, as far as low maintenance. There just really isn't a whole lot once you find a happy spot for them. Yeah.
I mean,
every
year I think, oh, they're never going to come back up, and then they come back better than ever. So it's really a nice look.
Yeah, good idea.
My question is this. I thought that I had bought a clematis 2 years ago, and I planted it, and last year it did not bloom at all. And this year... there was nothing happening until about 2 weeks ago, and it had all of these tiny, tiny little buds on it, and now they're little tiny, tiny white flowers.
Mm-hmm.
So is that a clematis?
There is a sweet autumn clematis that blooms right now, so which is probably what it is. Yep.
Well, that must be it.
That is it. And actually, they generally are very fragrant, and it's nice to have something blooming this time of year.
Yeah, but it surprised me because the other ones I've had in the past have been large flowers.
Yeah, these are actually there are quite a few clematis that have those smaller flowers, and certainly that's one that's really a good one. It's very vigorous. Normally very vigorous. Doesn't sound like yours is quite taken off yet, but I think you'll find over time that it really will grow into a nice plant.
That's my next question. When do I cut that back in the fall, or just let it die back on its own?
You certainly get once it dies back, you can cut it then or cut it in the spring. Either one.
Okay,
it's just fine.
Because about how tall would you say off the ground?
I would really clean it up. Those guys are really normally very tough, and they bloom on the new wood that's produced that year. So I generally cut mine back to about 6 to 8 inches.
Okay.
It's pretty tough. So,
and the other thing is also about cutting back. I have started planting irises all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Now their stalks still look really green. Are we supposed to cut those back as well?
This is the bearded irises you're talking about, the big bearded.
Well,
I've
got a variety of different ones.
Okay, so it's not like Siberian or...
Oh, no.
Okay, so it's big bearded. Mm-hmm. So generally what we do with those, because there is a problem with an insect called iris borer.
Oh, yes.
And so generally we do cut those back, usually about this time of year, again, back to that 6 inches or so. And,
okay.
And a lot of times the top part starts to kind of brown up and look bad anyway. So you cut that off and get rid of that, and then it helps to get rid of the eggs of the iris borer.
Oh, good.
So.
Okay, well, thank you so
much.
All right, thank you. And next we'll talk with somebody on a cell phone in Farmer City, line 4. Hello.
Yeah, hi, David. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A couple of quick questions for your guest. I planted a weeping willows about 10 years ago, and three of them, kind of on the easement of my property. And this summer the power company came in and said, well, it's getting a little bit too big, and we're just going to have to trim around the wires. And I said, okay, well, you know, go ahead and trim. And, of course, they're absolutely decimated. They look horrendous. So I am figuring to cut the trees down completely because they look so bad. My question is there a dwarf weeping willow that would be available that, you know, wouldn't grow quite as tall and quite as full as the regular tree? Do you know about that?
Yeah, I don't know of any dwarf weeping willows. There are dwarf pussy willows. I mean, I don't know whether, you know, what part you just like the shape of them is kind of what you're thinking, or...
Well, I planted them to kind of a remembrance of my mother. She passed away. That was kind of her favorite tree.
Oh, okay. Sure.
They grew up, you know, really nice. So, you know, everybody in the little town that I live in goes, oh, my God, what did they do to your tree? And so I'd like to replant weeping willows, but, you know, I don't know. There's an arborist in town. He's supposed to be getting back to me, but I've never heard of such a tree, and I just was wondering if you had.
Yeah, I don't know of any dwarf weeping willows. Those trees tend to all be big. I mean,
yeah.
That's just the nature of the beast. But there are dwarf pussy willows that are weeping. And so you might, you know, you might think about something like that if you're kind of going with willows. And actually, they're very pretty. Sure. But they have that same kind of habit, but obviously on a much smaller scale. And those are really pretty. I really like them.
Hey, thanks. I had another quick question. I have a peonies in the front of my house, and it's about 4 years old, and it's been blooming just beautifully. And of course, the flower gets really, really big and heavy, and it sags down.
Right.
My question to you is, there's no reason for me. I mean, once the flower dies, if I were to trim that plant is not going to bloom again, is it? I mean,
correct.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Right. With peonies, they're not going to bloom again. Right.
Okay.
You want to.
In the wintertime, what I've been doing is, you know, after the frost and everything is dead, I just go ahead and, you know, go over it with the grass cutter. Is that?
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, yeah. Once the foliage is dead, then that's fine. You just want to let it ripen naturally so that it can, you know, make food reserves for the next year, and that's fine. You might even think about, you know, I don't know how you feel about cages, but if it's one that really seems to flop every year, you may just decide you want to go ahead and put a cage around it, because unfortunately with some of the peonies, they're just like that. There's a lot of newer varieties now. I don't know if you're stuck on that particular one, but there's lots of new varieties now that have these huge stems, and they tend not to flop as much. So, you know, you might even think about some of the newer varieties.
Okay, and I just had one other quick question just for my own edification, because I'm sure I'm missing the point on this. But, every year around this time, the stores, garden shops, they sell mums, which are beautiful plants.
Right.
And you know, and I actually have bought them. What I don't understand, and like I said, I'm sure I'm missing the point, is, you know, we've got 4 to 6 weeks maybe before the first frost. Is there a point to the mums? I mean, people don't bring them in the house. I mean, it seems
right
to me to buy them for, you know, maybe 4 weeks. You know, am I missing something? I never understood.
This is sort of like the elephant in the room. You've kind of asked that elephant in the room question. You know, I guess it is one of those things that mums should be hardy, as in they should come back next year. But I think you've caught upon the thing is that, unfortunately, I think through some of the breeding kind of things that are going on, and I think just because of site selection, they don't like really wet soils in the wintertime, that a lot of times they don't come back. So they are truly perennials. They're supposed to come back the next year. But I think more and more people are treating them as this, if you found out, this 4 to 6 week annual. So totally, you know, obviously it's totally up to you. You might, you know, if people want late season flowers, they might think about some of the perennials like asters that we know traditionally do come back every year, or just make sure when they put their mums out there that they site them so they're in a nice, you know, fairly dry spot so they're not too wet in the wintertime. And there's other things, too. You know, there's coral bells, and there's lots of late season things that you can plant that aren't necessarily mums.
Yeah, and then one other real quick question. I've got a little rock garden in my backyard, and I've planted tiger lilies. And last couple of years, they've come up really beautiful and flowered and everything. And this year, they didn't do hardly anything at all. And I have a dwarf evergreen that's basically, I guess, dying of rust, or it's turning brown. So could the tiger lilies be affected by, you know, acidity in the soil, or should I be cutting them back, or is there anything I can do?
Is it particularly wet spot at all?
No,
Or was it wetter than normal this year?
Well, it doesn't get a whole lot of sun, but I was surprised because prior to this year, I mean, they just, you know, really coming up really beautiful orange flowers. And
right.
I just was wondering, well, maybe I need to cut them down or something. I don't know.
No, I don't think. I have a feeling it's probably related to the site. They don't like really wet soils, for one thing. They take some shade, but I would say they're more in that partial shade category where you still need probably 4 to 6 hours of sun for them to do well. So I don't know whether, you know, trees have gotten bigger or whatever, but I'd really wonder about how wet it was in that area, certainly because of the rain we've had. So I don't think it's anything that you've necessarily done. It's probably more has to do with maybe with the weather that we've had and just with the amount of rain and stuff that we've had. So I don't think there's anything you necessarily need to do unless you want to move them, of course, which you could do this time of year.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. We're a little bit past our midpoint here. Our guest is Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and she is here with us once a month to talk about things that grow in the home landscape, trees, shrubs, flowers. We can also talk about houseplants. You're looking for a suggestion for a particular plant, she can do that. If you have a problem and you're not quite sure what it is or how to solve it, well, tell us about it, and she'll see if she can help you out. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. And we have next a caller in Bradley, line one, right here. Hello.
Yeah. Tell me, can you tell me why my cosmos aren't blooming or budding? They're my favorite flower. They're 5 feet tall, but no blooms.
Hmm. So these are ones you started from seed, or you let them come back from seed?
Some are from seed, and some were volunteers.
Okay. Both. So I wouldn't know unless is it fairly sunny? I mean, there's a definitely sunny type.
It's pretty sunny.
Do they seem like they're forming buds at all?
No,
or
not at all that I can see.
Well, I wonder a little bit about the weather. There certainly is a warmer weather kind of plant than maybe what we've had. So I wonder, because it's been fairly cool. You know, we certainly had some stretches of warm weather, but it's been fairly cool. I would think that, you know, some of those plants get the reason I was asking if they actually were forming buds or not, because sometimes when we get really particularly wet weather, they'll form a little bit of a bud, but then they get a disease problem, a little botrytis problem, and then the bud dies, and they just never seem like they flower, but then, you know, they actually tried to form a bud, but because of disease issues.
I'll look at them closer.
So you might want to look at them closer. I wouldn't know what else, but they should be, I would think, by now, really starting to think about really flowering like crazy.
Yeah.
They probably had a slow start, especially the volunteers had a slow start in the beginning, yeah, because it was kind of wet and kind of cool. And so it wouldn't surprise me if things were late, but I would sure think by now, especially with that warmer weather what we've had. So I'd look at them closer.
Not doing anything is zucchini. They've got blooms and no zucchini.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
Wow. So did you, probably the other thing that we think about, of course, if you're not actually getting the fruit, I don't know how long those have been out there, but, you know, they have male and female flowers, so they have to be pollinated. And depending on what kind of pollinators you have out there, or if you have pollinators, then that makes all the difference in the world. But you should be able to look and see if the female flowers, there's kind of a swollen area behind the flower. And then if you might want to look and make sure that you've got some of those out there so that you can actually get some fruit off of them. But again, it'd be another one of those that probably late start, but I had a ton of zucchini this year, so I'm not sure why.
I had a problem with zucchini.
Yeah, usually, unless you get squash vine borer, which is the other thing that people often get, but if the vines are still alive.
I planted them late. I thought that was what I heard you should do.
Right. So I'm not sure. You can certainly try and pollinate them yourself. You can be a little bee and.
I'll look into that. I don't know how to do that, but. The other thing we've been talking about is you do cut down the iris leaves to 6 inches or so.
That you do? Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Right. Normally, we'd
want. Have.
Well, if you haven't had a problem with the iris borer, then that's fine. But generally, it's one of those things that just sort of makes sure you don't have a problem with the iris borer, because it actually lays their eggs. A moth actually lays its eggs, you know, this time of year. And by getting rid of those leaves, then you don't have an issue, and you can get rid of the eggs that way.
Yeah. Okay. So. The other thing on the subject of cutting down, bee balm and daylilies.
Mm-hmm.
You cut those down at all?
Well, with all the perennials, it's just a good rule of thumb is to wait until they die down naturally, or until you can't stand it anymore because they look so bad. But usually, you try and let them stay there as long as they can, because as long as there's green leaves, so try to just hang on and hopefully in the next month.
Bee balm looks pretty bad.
Yeah, if you know, it's one of those things. If it looks so bad that the leaves aren't even green anymore, maybe it's got powdery mildew or something, then I would just go ahead and get rid of that and just cut it off, and that's fine. But as long as the leaves are green, I'd leave them on.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Right.
Sure. Thank you. Enjoy your program.
Sure.
Thank you. I have some bee balm, and it definitely has powdery mildew, and it doesn't look very attractive. I want to make sure I would like it to come back next year, so I don't want to be cutting it. I sort of feel like, well, I don't want to be cutting it back right now, even though it maybe it's not real attractive.
Yeah, usually with powdery mildew, you should find that the leaves on the bottom are the ones that are really the lousy ones, and then a top might have a few green ones. And sometimes what I've done is just taken my hand and sort of stripped those brown leaves off the bottom, and then they just look better.
Oh,
and then
okay.
I can stand it. But if there's no brown leaves, I mean, if there's no green leaves left, then there really isn't much reason to leave them on there, and you want to get rid of the disease stuff anyway. So you kind of just have to decide what your sensibilities
are.
Other than
putting a fungicide on there, is there anything you can do about it?
You know, powdery mildew is one of those things that we often see on bee balm, but there are plenty of varieties out there now that are resistant to powdery mildew. So it truly is one of those things. It's like with phlox that gets powdery mildew quite a bit, is that sometimes you just have to decide that, you know, I don't want to deal with this anymore, and I want to get a new variety that doesn't get it. So just look for those powdery mildew-resistant varieties.
Okay.
So.
Let's talk next with someone in Terre Haute, line two. Hello.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Long-time listener, first-time caller. Really do enjoy this show. Question and a quick one. How about transplanting and dividing Shasta daisies at this time of year? What's your thought on that?
Are these the ones that kind of reseed all over the
No, they're perennials.
So they're the perennial types, okay. Because the reason I think there's no reason why you can't do it now, most of the perennials, there really wouldn't be a whole lot of ones that I wouldn't transplant this time of year, as in the first couple weeks of September. I wouldn't wait much later than that, but I think it's fine to do it now. If there's certain perennials that people have concerns about whether they're going to make it or not, then I'd probably wait till spring. But I wouldn't have any problem with Shasta daisies and some of those guys. The one thing I will tell you is that's why I was asking. Some of the daisies that tend to reseed themselves, and you kind of have them because they're reseeding themselves, I've had better luck doing it in the spring. And I don't know whether they just don't get very well established, but the real tiny plants seem to do better if they're moved in the spring.
Yeah, well, these guys are pretty big.
If they're big, then
I was hoping to divide them and
I go for it.
The bed, so I go
I'd go for it. Beautiful day.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you. The next caller is in Urbana and line number three. Hello.
Yes, that's me.
Yes.
I have a dahlia curse.
Curse?
Curse of the dahlia.
Yes.
I like that.
Black dahlia, yeah. Maybe that's me. I can grow lots of stuff, but for 3 or 4 years running, I have not been able to get dahlias. Some years... Well, I mean, it's getting worse. First few years plants, then last year I started the plants down the basement early. I thought, give them a head start. Nada. This year, they were just sprouting. I was very careful to put the stake in and not spear that tuber. Nothing.
They don't flower, or they just don't grow, or they don't...
Whoa, they didn't even come up. All I had was my nicely placed stalks. Doesn't look so good.
So do you think they're getting too wet?
I don't know.
Okay. I think I'd probably dig them up and just see, because that tuber, you'll see their tuberous root, you'll tell right away whether it's too wet or not, because they don't like really wet soils. And I'll be honest with you, I'm probably not the person to ask. Because
I'm not the person to ask.
Because I have not had great success with dahlias. Maybe we need somebody to call in that has really good success with dahlias, because I was very disappointed this year. I bought some really fairly expensive dahlias. They were existing plants, planted them out there. They did okay, looked really good, and then by the time it got really hot, they sort of, you know, didn't do anything. Now I notice they're starting to recover. So I'm really wondering. I don't think it's just you and I. I'm starting to blame the plants. But I'm not sure what to tell you. But I definitely know that they certainly don't like really wet soil. So I would wonder if they're getting too wet. And certainly some of that we didn't have a whole lot of control over, depending on how much rain we got. Yeah. I'm also thinking, and maybe somebody can tell me if they think this is absolutely wrong, is that because I've noticed now mine are starting to recover more, that they don't like that really, really hot stuff. And so I'm really kind of wondering if maybe there's a temperature thing that's going on there, too. So maybe somebody can.
They need full sun, right?
Yes, right. They do need full sun. But I am kind of wondering a little bit about the issues. Or maybe if they dry out too much, they don't do as well. So obviously I need to do a little bit more checking myself to see, because I'm not very happy with what I've done.
My dad had them, and I thought he always just kind of stuck them in and let them go.
I know. Don't you hate that?
The fertile plains of Illinois.
Yeah, I don't know. So I think that's something. I don't give up yet, because they are really nice.
Okay, but I'm buying on the. And how much difference do you think there is on buying the Farm and Fleet bag of one for $1.99 as opposed to a White Flower Farm exorbitant.
Well, certainly it's one of those things like you see with a lot of things, is that if you want that certain color, because certainly with dahlias, there's different petal types and different shapes and sizes and all that kind of stuff. If I think that's when you start getting into White Flower Farm and some of the catalogs and some of those, if you want a very specific size and all that kind of stuff. I think as long as that, I think the other thing with the tuberous roots and like we see with bulbs and a lot of those guys is that the bigger the better.
Right.
So
right.
I would really wonder, sometimes I've noticed on some of those grab bag kinds of things is the tuberous roots are so small, I really wonder if they're going to do much of anything anyway.
So do you think starting them inside was, is a...
So are you starting them from seed or you're starting from...
I bought the tubers and instead of just letting them wall around in a garage, I actually potted them up down the basement, so maybe March or so.
Which I would say would be a good idea.
That's
absolutely. Is to get a head start on them. So maybe between you and I, we can figure out what's wrong with it, and we'll talk about it next month on what we did wrong. Or maybe in the meantime, somebody can let us know what's
nice
going on.
Somebody else has the curse of the black dahlia.
Curse of the black dahlia, because I'm with you. I think I'm in that same sisterhood.
Okay.
Yes, sorry,
right.
I can't help
Thank you. We have about 10 minutes left here. Sandy Mason is our guest. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And once a month, she's here on the program to answer questions. It's a garden show.
I try.
She's a garden expert.
But don't
and what you don't want to hear
that.
Is, I'm not the person to ask. Well, okay.
I'm just being honest here, David.
Okay, good. Very good. Let's talk next with somebody in Chicago, line 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Good morning, Sandy.
Uh-huh.
Good morning.
Hi.
Last spring, I purchased a flopping clump crab. I believe it was called Prairie Fire.
Uh-huh.
And it was dense and spectacular, and it's gotten progressively worse. And I went back to my nursery, and they said, oh, just keep watering it. And so I've kept watering it, and it gets worse and worse. And I keep watering it, and it gets worse and worse. And they're telling me that it could be a year or two before it really shows what I purchased last spring. Am I getting the runaround?
Well, so when you say it looks worse and worse, so it's actually getting branch dieback?
It's not branch dieback, but all the leaves have gotten the blight, like the apple scab. And in fact, it's a hybrid that doesn't get apple scab. So it just looks poor.
Yeah, I think I might be going back to the garden center again because it really is one of the, you know, it certainly is one of the varieties that's supposed to be resistant to apple scab. You're absolutely right. The one thing that, you know, when they say resistant doesn't mean that it never gets it, but it means that it's less likely to get it. So it doesn't mean that it's never going to get it. And we've had some pretty good pressure the last couple of years on apple scab because when we have cool, wet springs, we tend to get a lot of apple scab issues. So there's certainly some of that going on. But I would say if it's still not, and it's been in a year now?
No, just
since this spring. Well, it's certainly, you would expect a young transplant not to necessarily look all that great this year. But next year, next spring, it should be looking good. And
okay,
if it's...
So do you suggest that I follow their creed of about an inch or two of water every Monday?
It depends. It really depends. And it's one of those things that, you know, during that hot spell that we had in August, that might not have been enough. But right now, obviously, when we have these moderate temperatures, it might be too much if you have really clay soils. I don't know, is your soil fairly black or is it clay or pretty good drainage? Or
it's okay.
Okay.
It's medium.
Yeah. So it's really is one of those things. It's hard to put sort of this recipe on when to water things sometimes because you really have to look at the temperature because it makes all the difference in the world what temperatures and also how much wind we get. We get a lot of hot, dry winds. Once a week may not be enough on a new transplant like that. So generally your best bet is always just to get a trowel or something and just sort of dig around in there and see if the soil's still moist or not. And do you have it mulched or?
Yeah, I have it mulched.
Okay. So the, you know, 3 to 4 inches or so, not too much. Kind of thing, a little mulch around it.
Okay. So,
sounds good.
Try it again. We'll see what happens next spring.
Yeah, but I would continue my discussions with your garden center. So, because most of the time there's just a year warranty on those things. And so if next spring it's not looking so good, then they're alerted or somehow that
there goes $480.
Well, then I would be definitely discussing it with them now or just say you want a replacement or something because, you know, that's a tough thing.
What I'll do is go back and offer them a suggestion, and that is to keep what I've got. Extend the warranty one
there you go.
Or replace it now.
Absolutely. And I think that's perfectly reasonable to make those kind of decisions. And if you really feel like and it sounds like you've done what you need to do and what they told you to do, then certain, because sometimes, you know, trees just don't transplant well for whatever reason, or they weren't particularly good trees at the time. You know, they look good, but for one reason or another, they had a reduced root system or something. So it's tough.
Well, it was spectacular, so hopefully I'll get it back. Have a nice day.
Okay. Good luck.
Thanks for
the call.
Tough. We got about 5 minutes left here. We'll go next to someone in Champaign, and this is line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Just a couple questions on transplanting daylilies. Do I do that now, or should I wait till the spring?
Go for it. That's my words for today. Yeah.
They're still green?
Yeah. Daylilies are really pretty tough, to be honest with you. And they're one of those that I would have no problem dividing them right now. I'd leave the green foliage on, you know, as much as you can, but I would have no qualms about dividing them right now.
Okay. Sure. Arborvitaes, what about those? Should I wait till spring to get – I got to replace one that died.
So you want to plant it or –
Yeah, I need to plant a new one, so I'm debating should I wait till spring.
I would do it right now. I would have no problem. Yeah. And the nice thing is a lot of stuff's on sale right now. So you can take advantage of those sales. You know, it's one of those things. September's really generally really good month. And as long as the soil temperatures are above 45 degrees or so, a lot of the woody plants and stuff do just fine. And, you know, they'll continue to do root growth and all that kind of stuff. So.
Okay. And if I want to move one from one place to another, and I also have a little fir tree I wanted to move, can I do that now or should I wait till spring? Somebody told me they have very shallow root, you know, just a one tap root, and it's not as to do them now because if it freezes, they don't have time to really grow.
Yeah, as far as actually moving them is kind of a different story because you're actually disrupting the roots that are there and you're never quite sure. Really moving bigger stuff or stuff that's been there for a while, I'd probably be more apt to do it in the spring, you know, early spring.
And then move the daylilies and stuff now.
Yes.
And replace the one. I can do that now.
Yep, absolutely.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye. One more caller, and this is also someone in Champaign. It's line two. Hello.
Hello. Thank you. I'd like to know what is edamame or edamame, E-D-A-M-A-N-E.
Edamame.
Edamame.
Yeah, what is it?
They're soybeans, actually green soybeans.
Oh, okay.
They're yummy. They're very good.
All the time, I didn't know what it was.
Yeah, it's actually it's a soybean, but it's green. And usually you actually buy them and they're still in the pod, but you don't eat the pod. You sort of pop them out, and some people boil them and put salt all over them. And they're very good and very nutritious. And it's not the same soybeans that you're getting out in that they're out in the field. It's a different variety. But
okay, well, thanks for solving my mystery.
Sure.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're down here. We have a couple of minutes left. Spring flowering bulbs. We can start doing that. No?
Yeah, absolutely. You can start thinking about planting those, or you still would have a little bit of time if you want to order them. This is a great time. And lots of, you know, there's lots of little small bulbs out there where you don't have to dig a very big hole. You know, the Grecian windflower and crocus and some of those that really you'll appreciate next year. This is also a great time if you're only going to fertilize once with your lawn. This is the time to do it. If you're just doing that one application a year, especially. Also, we're still in a time now, if you wanted to reseed a lawn, you could still do that. It wouldn't wait too much longer than now. But certainly if you're doing any reseeding, you could get a really... Usually we have very good temperatures and plenty of moisture this time of year to reseed a lawn. So it's usually an excellent time.
This year I was really thinking, I've been thinking about this for a while, but I was thinking that what I'd really like to do is get some more things that are of those things that are of the first flowering stuff in the spring. For like snowdrops. We have snowdrops
great.
In there and they're really, really nice. Aconite, I was thinking about. Yeah, this is a really pretty yellow flower. And there may be some others like that. But I'm thinking like how long into the fall can you plant those things?
Certainly through the month of October. I'm not sure I'd wait much longer than October. But so you have plenty of time to do that. Hellebores are a good perennial for really, really early season bloom. So those are good. So there's lots of things. But I think you're right. Trying to stretch those seasons out, looking at things that maybe bloom really late or really early or, you know, those kind of things.
Yeah. So now, is there something you'd like to
mention?
Yes,
I'd like to mention something real quick. The Illinois Natural History Survey is celebrating 150 years. So just 4 years less than Illinois has been a state, believe it or not. So that's a long time. So Illinois Natural History Survey celebrating their anniversary on September 26th and 27th. Lots of fun activities to find out what's going on in natural resources in Illinois. Excellent insect collection on Saturday. Bring your kids down. And you can go to their website, which is www.inhs for Illinois Natural History Survey.uiuc.edu. Go to their website, great activities.
Okay. And now we still have, you know, a minute left.
Speeding
I mean, is
up.
There anything else? So we've talked a little bit about the fact that this is for a lot of perennials. This is a great time to plant new plants. It can be for a lot of things, a good time to move stuff around. We got into a bulb planting. If you're going to do fertilizing your lawn one time, this is a good time to do it because it actually then does get in there. And the fertilizer actually stays in there so that then when things really get going in the spring, you're going to get a quicker sort of a green up.
Right. Well, plus this is the big time for Kentucky bluegrass and stuff to really be growing. This is perfect temperatures. It loves this, as you know. So when you fertilize, it really is taking the advantage of that. And it gets it really nice and healthy before it goes into winter, so then it can recover well in the next spring. Also, if you have a really thick thatch problem, like more than a half inch or so, you could certainly do core aerifying this time of year. It's a good time to do that. So that's another thing to sort of think about if you've had issues. And certainly if you have weed issues, really think about why isn't the grass growing, in my lawn. Why isn't it growing? And so get those areas, if you truly decide you want a lawn grass in there, seed it now. So along the sidewalk or wherever where you can crabgrass, rather than worrying so much about the weed, think about getting good grass in there, because that's the reason why you're getting weeds is because there's open soil. Anytime you have open soil, you're going to get weeds. So get some good grass in there, overseed. This would be a good time to be doing that as well. So.
Okay. And anything else to be thinking about at this particular point? Because things are still, we're not really that much into the wind down phase. I think things are still, doing pretty well, and you can enjoy what's out there. And before things really start to get to the point where you know that we're headed into winter.
Right. And then evaluate maybe some of your shrubbery and some of those things, and just really decide maybe it's time to take them out, replace them. It's a good time to be doing those kind of things. Or if you have anything that's spring blooming, you wouldn't want to prune it now, but just to sort of keep that in the back of your head that come February, March or so, you want to make sure that you at least prune those things that are summer blooming, and then after they bloom, the spring things, you can prune those. So lilacs, forsythia, you wait till after they bloom.
Okay.
So,
well, we'll wrap it up for this time around. Sandy will be back here with us next month. In the meantime, if you have questions, of course, there's somebody like Sandy all over
the
state. So they're always up for questions. That's what their job is. So you can look in the phone book, and it's sometimes listed under the county, and it sometimes would be listed under University of Illinois. So one way or another, you can find the person that's close to you. Extension has a great website that has a lot of information on there, so you can do that. And then if you're within the range of our television station, WILL-TV, we have a program. It's on Thursday nights at 7 o'clock. Show's called Illinois Gardener. Diane Nolan is the host for the program, and she has an ever-changing cast of guests. Sandy is often on the show. We have people from the University of Illinois. We have people who work in the various garden centers around our area, and they're there to answer questions. So again, it's a live show. And if you're looking for suggestions about particular plants, you got some kind of problem in your landscape, you can call in, and chances are one of the people on the show will have an answer for you. So check that out if you have not seen the show, Illinois Gardener, Thursdays at 7 on WILL-TV. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Sandy Mason, she's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County.